Hey, welcome to Divergent Paths with Dan Dunford. I'm your host, Dan Dunford, and I hope sincerely that you are enjoying the first week of fall. It's beautiful here in New York. I don't know if you're listening to this in New York, in which case you'll agree with me, but if you're not, be jealous because it's fantastic right now. Also, you can be jealous because New York's better than where you're living. Ooh, that sounds harsh. I shouldn't have said that, but I'm going to leave it in because why not? So I'm glad you're listening. Thank you for subscribing. Thank you for tuning in, to use radio parlance. You're beautiful. I don't know. This week on the podcast, I have Salome Scheidegger, who is a pianist that my friend and previous guest, Sebastian Vera, put me in touch with. She's really interesting. She does a lot of stuff. You know, she started out doing the same kind of classical music thing that everyone does. I mean, she was able to, you know, do some things earlier than some people, but, and now she does a lot of, video game music. That's a part of musical culture that has really, has really trended upward in the past, few years. I mean, there's always fans of things like Final Fantasy and nowadays with video games being considered artistic ventures, much like film or TV, you know, a lot of money goes into the soundtracks as well, in addition to, you know, making sure that something, you know, guns look accurate and that, you know, shooting things works the way shooting things is supposed to work. A lot more abstract things and interesting art comes out of the video game world, and along with that comes, you know, video game music that's really, really great. And of course, you know, like I said, games like Final Fantasy and Zelda really were on the forefront of that kind of a thing. But this is what Salome does, and it's really interesting. And talking to her about it and how she got into it was really, it was really interesting and rewarding for me. And I hope that you find it to be the same, because it was really cool. I could give you more background on her, but you know, we covered in the interview. So, she was kind enough to allow me to use a track off of her most recent album at the end of this episode. She put out an album last year of all video game and anime classics, so to speak. I mean, there's on this album there are tunes from Skyrim, from World of Warcraft, from Mass Effect 3, BioShock, and the classic GoldenEye 64, because that's, you know, awesome. But the track off that I will be using is called My Neighbor Totoro, which is a well-known and kind of a classic anime film. So that track is drawn from that movie, so it's really great. I hope you enjoy it, and enjoy the interview with Salome. I will be putting up a video that I did with her in a couple weeks, later this week, on the YouTube front. I just released my video with Seraph Brass yesterday on YouTube, so check that out. Later this week, I'll be putting up my speedrun video with Jen Baker. I did my interview with her about a month ago, or released my interview with her about a month ago, so keep an eye out for those on YouTube. And yeah, I have some good stuff coming up in the next few weeks, so I hope you're ready for that. And as always, you know, if you enjoy the show, head over to iTunes and subscribe, leave a review. I'm also on Stitcher and Google Play, and of course YouTube. Subscribe to the YouTube channel if you enjoy the videos, and if you are in a position where you can support the podcast, and head over to patreon.com, P-A-T-R-E-O-N. That's patreon.com/divergentpathspod. Shoot me an email at divergentpathspod@gmail.com. You know, do it up. All right. Talk to you guys next week. Hey, one quick thing before we get started with the podcast. I was bouncing around Salome's YouTube channel while I was editing the podcast. And you know what? I wanted to put another track of hers on the episode. So at the end will still be the My Neighbor Totoro piece. And but what you're about to hear, as soon as I'm done talking, is her own arrangement and cover of the opening credits sequence, opening titles track for Marvel's Daredevil, the show on Netflix. I just came across it while I was editing, and you know, I'm a huge Daredevil fan, and so I felt like, you know, why not? More music is never a bad thing. So enjoy that, and yeah.
Awesome.
Well, thanks so much for doing this.
Oh, thank you for having me on the podcast.
Yeah,
it's a great honor.
Is it? I don't know.
Yeah, of course.
It's funny. I mean, it was just like 100%. Occasionally people will, out of the blue, like text me and be like, mm-hmm. Here's a person. You should talk to them. Mm-hmm. And some people, when they do that, I'm like, I probably shouldn't say this, but like some people I'm just like, oh, okay.
That sure, sounds great. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes, but like there's certain people that who, you know, and Sebastian being one of them, when he texts me and is like, mm-hmm. You should talk to this person. I'm like, oh, okay.
That's very nice.
Yeah. He's, well, he ended up being one of the best ones I've done.
Yeah. Just, I listened to it. It was really, well, really
part
great.
Of it's like he's crazy in a good way.
Yeah.
But anyway.
No, he has some really interesting thoughts, and because he thinks about everything very thoroughly. And so you could hear that on the podcast. It's great.
a mutual friend of ours who's known him for a long time, I spoke to like a couple weeks later. And he's mm-hmm. like, yeah, I listened to it. And I've known the dude for almost 10 years and didn't know any of that stuff. I was like, oh. Well, I'm glad bringing friends together. That's really what I do here. I'm not interested in making money or being important. Mm-hmm. I just want to bring people together.
All right.
That sounds...
Sounds good.
So, can. Anyway. So. You play piano and stuff and
I do. Yeah. I've been playing piano for a while.
for a minute. And you also... You also went to my alma mater, which is...
Yes, Manus. Right. Yeah.
You're still in debt. And still in debt to my alma mater, much like I am. I
would imagine. God.
I don't know. I have so many mixed feelings about that. Like, there's so many good things, but was it worth it? I have my doubts.
Well, I mean, there's always pros and cons. I was there only for about 1.5 years, so I probably don't have the same feelings you have.
Well, I was there for 4 years, four-ish years, and it was the second time going through my bachelor's degree. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so I imagine.
Transfer somewhere. Anyway, enough about that sob story. You were just saying that you just finished up at WizardCon.
Wizard World, yep.
Wizard World? It's a con, but it's not.
It's a Comic-Con, but it's called Wizard World.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's so many now. Like,
there are
WonderCon.
A lot.
There's like a board gaming one that happens in Indiana now, too. Oh, like, yeah. The national one is in Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
And even, like, God, I was just up in Lake Placid last week with my girlfriend, and we were watching I was making her watch the Olympics because that's all I wanted to watch. But I kept getting ads for like the Vermont Comic Con. I'm like,
really? Oh, I don't know about that one. There are so many different ones.
That's exactly my point. Like, it started out being like San Diego and New York, and then it's, well, first like San Diego for decades, and then New York to some extent, and now it's just
those
like,
two are still probably the biggest ones.
By far.
Yeah.
So Wizard World in Chicago.
Yes, Wizard World in Chicago. Wizard World actually has a bunch of different cities they go to every year in the U.S. And I've done a bunch of them last year with the band I play with sometimes, Critical Hit, which is a video game music cover band, half rock, half classic instruments. And we did a bunch of them last year, and it was so much fun. And then this year, I had enough material in my solo repertoire in that kind of genre that I'm starting to play solo recitals with my arrangements and the arrangements I recorded. And so I talked to the team at Wizard World and asked if I could play there at some point, and they gave me a spot this past weekend. It was my first solo spot in a con. It was really exciting. I loved it. It's so great. The crowd there is really amazing because they're there for the fun, and they love that music. They love the games. They love the animes, and they know most of them, and it's so much fun to play for them. So yeah, definitely, I love those cons.
Now, do you go? Would you go to place things like that? Like just
as a visitor?
Yeah.
Now, yes. I didn't really know about those cons before I started playing with Critical Hit. And the first one I did ever was BlizzCon with them, the huge gaming convention by Blizzard.
Oh, Blizzard Entertainment.
Yeah, exactly, in L.A. And that was just an incredible experience for me because I hadn't ever been to one of those. And it was just so fascinating to see so many people getting together who are so passionate about video games and, you know, dressing up and playing their, you know, competitions and everything. And it's just, it's really fun to see. Now I would totally do. I hadn't played a con in a year before this past weekend, and I really missed it. I was so happy to be back at Wizard World because I just love the atmosphere there.
Yeah. I have my very, very specific nerd interests, but one of them was not spending a lot of money to go and stand in line for things. That's the con to the con. that's literally like my cynical brain immediately goes there. It's like, sure. And I think that's partially due to the fact that my parents never wanted to take me to amusement parks growing up, which is a sim like Disney World and Disneyland are like kind of a deal like that. I mean, obviously I understand that it's not, but it's like a similar kind of like, go and you can dress up as like these people and you can like meet your movie character friends.
Yep.
And like, we never went to those things, and I'm not saying that's a good thing or a bad thing. I'm just saying that like, I think them being like, why would you want to spend $100 a ticket to go stand in line for a bunch of rides with a bunch of alum?
Yeah, no, I understand.
That being said, I understand the appeal. I just don't want to spend money for the appeal.
Yeah. Well, what I love about it is that it just brings people together who are so passionate about something. And the entire weekend, because usually the cons are during a weekend, and the entire weekend consists of people who have been preparing for months for this. Mm-hmm. And you know, those with Critical Hit, with the band, we usually play our usual spot for our performance is before the biggest event of the con is the costume contest. Mm-hmm. And we usually play right before that. And so during our meet and greet, when we sign CDs and posters afterwards, we are in the same hall as the costume contest and it goes on. And it is amazing the costumes these people make for the convention, and they spend months for that, and even years actually. Yeah. And it's just so nice to see the joy that it brings them, and it's just the saddest thing about the con is I remember once I stayed until Sunday afternoon when they were tidying everything up when the con was over. That's, and that was one of the saddest moments. Because everybody is so depressed because it's over, and they were looking forward to this for such a long time.
Yeah, yeah.
So in that sense, it's kind of a happy place,
mm-hmm.
and that's what intrigues me about it. Also, I mean, I like animes, mm-hmm. and I like the merchandise. So I do occasionally enjoy being in the exhibition halls where they have all the stands,
and then they have like the authors, and then the characters.
Yeah.
Or if there's been a TV version, whoever's voiced.
Yeah, exactly.
Voiced
exactly. Yeah. Yeah, once I was playing with my good friend Taylor Davis, who is a violinist on
right.
YouTube. We played together at this anime convention in San Antonio, I think it was last year, called San Japan. And then there was a signing, I don't know what it was, a signing panel or so for VIPs there. And we were sitting next to a bunch of voice actors who had lent their voices for huge anime series like Attack on Titan and
mm-hmm.
Fairy Tail and stuff like that. It was kind of exciting to
yeah.
see these people.
So we'll come back to that stuff. We should just like go back to the beginning parts.
Yes.
of stuff. Now you grew up in not America.
Yes.
Right? Not
yes.
America, like the there's just one big
the
country.
Big
it's one big country, and it's called Not America.
Not America.
And as far as I'm concerned,
I'm a foreigner.
Yeah, like the Olympics are just like America and not
yes.
America. Like Kenya and
yeah.
Jamaica and Switzerland and France, they're all just one big country.
Mm-hmm.
That's not true. I don't think like that. I promise. I promise.
Good. Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
No, but where did you grow up?
Different places, actually. So I am Swiss. I
mm-hmm.
have a Swiss passport. Both my parents are Swiss, even though my mom is born and raised in Switzerland, but she's mostly, for the most part, she's Italian. So it's a little complicated.
Well,
but
I mean, share a border. I mean,
yeah.
It's not that complicated.
No,
it makes sense.
It's
like,
no,
it's like growing, well, I mean, it's not like growing up in Alabama and moving to Tennessee, but it's geographically.
It's
in,
very
in
close.
Geographically,
it's
relation,
very close.
Yes.
I know. Culturally, it's a little bit different, but it's fine.
I would imagine.
No, yeah.
But isn't,
so,
those, isn't it Swiss guards that are in the Vatican?
Yeah, that's
okay,
true.
Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Both my parents are Swiss. But my siblings and I have three siblings, and all of us were born in Japan because my parents lived in Japan for 6 years. And
just because?
Because my dad got a scholarship for postdoc studies at the University of Kyoto. And my mom, kind of coincidentally, she has a PhD in Japanese calligraphy. So they were both obsessed with Asia, as still are. I mean, that's like their favorite place.
So it might not have been as,
yeah.
it's not as big of a deal saying I want to go to Japan to finish my studies when you have...
Well, no, it's not a big... No, they wanted to go to Asia.
Mm-hmm.
Initially, I think it was Southeast Asia that interested the most, but they ended up being in Japan, and so all of us kids were born there. I was there until I was almost five.
Mm-hmm.
And then we moved back to the Italian-speaking part of Switzerland for 4 years, and then we moved to Zurich, which is in the German-speaking part. It's the biggest city in
mm-hmm.
Switzerland, and I spent most of my year, most of the years of my life I spent there.
Surrounded by giant banks.
Exactly. Yeah,
that's what I know about Zurich.
Pretty much.
excuse me. So you speak Japanese, you speak Italian, you speak German, or you just...
Yes, my mother tongue is German, although it's Swiss German. It's a little bit different from High German, but it's not...
Difference.
Yes, but it's not a written language, so at school we had to learn High German, so I speak both. Then Italian, because first of all, we lived in the Italian-speaking part of Switzerland. Also, my grandparents were both Italians, so I speak Italian. Then French, we had to learn at school anyways, so I speak French. And Japanese, I used to be fluent when I was little, but... You know, we moved. I had to learn Italian, so I didn't speak it anymore afterwards. But I'm learning it again now.
Hmm. Well, so, you're beginning Japanese. Over
yes.
There. Yeah, yeah.
Yep. Used very much.
Yeah. Well, mostly this is just functioning. Like, I mean, first of all, paint a background for you, but also to make me feel like an idiot. Anyway.
Well, I have to say though, I'm lucky to be Swiss because in Switzerland most people speak more like. At least three languages. Just because we're such a small country.
Just
and
because you think you're better than everyone? Is that?
Yeah, pretty much.
I mean, we are.
I'm not disagreeing. I didn't want to say it.
I'm not disagreeing with you. I deal in honesty here. So your parents aren't musicians.
No.
Musically inclined, or you just were like, was it? You know, a lot of parents just like, you are going to play piano when you're 3 or 5 or whatever.
It wasn't quite like that, a little bit. My parents wanted all my siblings and I to learn a classical instrument, just, you know, for education, mm-hmm. educational reasons. I wanted to play the piano from the beginning, and I just took it seriously. I had good teachers, and I practiced. And then I just decided, when I was 12 or 13, I decided that I wanted to do it professionally. But I was lucky because my parents were always, have been until this day, always very, very supportive.
Right.
My parents are both not musicians, but they always listen to a lot. We always listen to a lot of music, including a lot of classical music. Every breakfast together on a weekend and every dinner. We always had family dinners every night. Actually, we there was a thing at our home that we always ate together, and it was always a sit down dinner and where we talked about, you know, what happened during the day, and we had lengthy discussions and sometimes very loud discussions. there was always music in the background.
you can take the mom out of Italy, but you can't take the Italy out of the mom.
Actually, my dad is also kind of loud. Although, it's nice.
Do you have siblings?
Mm-hmm. I have 2 brothers and 1 sister.
Mm. That's a lot of people. Anyway. You said you decided you kind of wanted to do it, started doing it. Like, it's so funny with music because, like, if you want to... You have to decide so goddamn early.
Yeah.
If you want to be a
Absolutely.
Professional. Not so much trombone players. Brass players can get away with it.
Maybe,
I didn't.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't try. Like, I started earlier than most people, you know, most brass players did. But
when did you start?
8.
Oh, wow.
Most people start when they're 12.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But for string players, pianists, like, you pretty much have to decide, like, before you start high school.
Yeah.
Or at least, like, put in, even if you haven't decided, you have to, like, put in the work like you're
Definitely,
going to.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
And why did you want to? Like, there's just so many. I mean,
yeah.
Like, let's be real. Like,
you know, I don't know if it was lucky for me or unlucky. I didn't realize at that time. I just thought, you know, I love doing this.
That's true.
You know,
like, that's the plus side to figuring out, like, just deciding, quote unquote, when you're that young is, like, you'd have no fucking idea. And if you did, you might not decide to, like,
exactly.
really, like, go hard into the whole music thing.
Yep. Yeah. I know.
If people told you that, like,
oh God.
Yeah,
well,
you realize, like, one out
I
of every...
might still have done it because I'm a very stubborn person and I always kind of box through my own will. I don't know if that's an expression you use in English, but I'm just translated it from German.
Well, I'm just assuming you mean boxing, like the sport of boxing, not like putting things in boxes.
I boxed up my things.
Yeah, that's kind of what it sounded like, but you were making hand motions.
I just
have to let you know that if you make hand motions, they're not going to hear them.
I know. That's too bad for me because I use my hands a lot when I talk.
It's a thing. Yeah, whatever. But why did you, like, you just
I just loved it. Yeah. I loved it, and at that time, I had a lot of opportunities. I got to play with orchestras, and I got as a soloist, and I won a bunch of competitions too, and my surroundings were very encouraging, and I just loved it.
Well, I mean, I didn't know you won a bunch of competitions.
Now
I feel stupid for even asking.
No, they're youth competitions. I was in high school,
Well, anyway,
dark period of my life. I did not like those. I hated competitions.
This is in Switzerland.
No, right? I did ones in France, in Italy, and I traveled around a bunch for competitions.
I don't know. Are the parents there super intense about their kids?
Switzerland?
Yeah, I mean, just like
it depends.
You go to these
Some
competitions,
are.
Like,
yeah, I guess it's
it seems
the
like every time
there.
I see a competition, you know, when I was doing stuff in high school. And then it's just like the parents are like, not so much for brass players. Cause
tiger parents.
I was going to avoid that phrase, but sure. Yeah, I don't know. What it's.
I think in every country there are.
Did your parents kind of let you, like, were you motivated enough on your own that you kind of, I mean.
That's hard
to say. It's
a
little
say.
More
I
up
mean,
and down when you're a kid.
Like, it really is, because as a kid, I don't think you're first. Your instinct is to just sit at the piano for 2 hours a day when you're 10 or 12.
My instinct to sit at the piano has always been to not sit at the piano.
Yes. You know, it was kind of hard sometimes not going out with my friends and, go hang out in the afternoon. I love to do it, but still, it's not you don't want to do it every day. Mm. And so my parents never forced me to do anything. And especially with competitions, that was actually my teacher at the time. She didn't force me.
Yeah, okay, I see.
She was the bad guy. No,
they just outsourced it to someone else. Yeah, that makes sense.
No, they were just encouraging. Nobody ever forced me to do anything. And my teacher just wanted me, because she thought I was talented, she just wanted me to try the competitions. And And I ended up being more or less successful back then at the competitions. And I was lucky with my parents because they never forced me to, but they did always, kind of talk to me and say, Salma, if you really want to do this, you just have to practice, because they were, smart enough to know that you have to be a little ahead if you want to even have a chance. So.
Yeah. So did you come to the States for like school, or did you start? Did you start over there?
Well, my history with school is a little more complicated.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, I didn't.
Did you burn something down, or what's?
No. No, I did. I studied privately for most of my school. Scholastically career. I don't know how you say that in English.
Sure.
Yeah.
That
sure. Works. Let's say that. So I don't actually have a degree.
Oh.
And I came over here because
Manus didn't like wow you. So you were just like, I have to graduate here now. So I guess me saying that that's your alma mater is like not quite is not
it's
accurate.
Not quite
at all.
Accurate,
it's
no.
More of, well, you know, it's accurate in the sense like in the U.S. with like basketball, not anymore. You don't.
No, not anymore.
Building.
Yeah, that's true.
But like with basketball players and baseball players and football players, who like do a year or two and then go on to do their actual. But they still like claim like, oh, this is my alma mater, but none of them have degrees in anything.
Yeah, that's true. But you still, you still spend a bunch of time there, and you know the teachers, and you feel. Like
you're still abused by the you're still abused by the theory faculty. Yeah, it's fine. Whatever.
Where did I drop off? I came over here because not directly for school. I did want to study with Jerome Rose, mm-hmm. who was at Manus.
Yeah.
That was a big goal of mine because I loved his his way of teaching, his musicality, and I really had a lot of respect for that. And I wanted to take lessons with him. So that was one of the reasons I moved over here. But another big, big reason was that at that time, that was 6 years ago or something like that, seven years ago, I had this idea that I wanted to add visuals to a classical piano recital.
How fucking dare you? Seriously? Like, what are you thinking? you can't add multimedia to a classical music concert unless it's music that's written in the last 50 years. No one told you that? That's good. Good. So you started wanting to add like visuals.
Because I was kind of, I didn't feel very, I don't know, I just didn't feel very comfortable in the classical world, how it was, and I thought, it's just, these pieces are performed so many times by different people, always in the same way. And so I thought, why not add a good visual element to it? And so I was looking for people to work on that with me, all over, actually. And then by chance, a good friend of mine back in Zurich told me to go meet this project manager in New York, Steven Ehrenberg, who worked on a lot of Broadway shows and theater. And I went to see him while I was in New York for IKIF, the International Keyboard Festival, Institute Festival, who that was created by Jerome Rose and still directed by him. It's like a piano festival at Manus, used to be at Manus. Anyways, I was there for the summer, and so I thought I'd drop in his office, ask him, for his opinion, and talk to him about my idea. And he was very enthusiastic about it, and he thought, okay, let's do this together. And he found a video designer and a film director, William Cusick, who's enormously talented, and a lighting designer who works with big rock bands on tours, Mark Janowitz, who also is amazing. And we started working together. I wrote a basic script about what I wanted in the video and what I imagined being, in the visuals while I played Chopin Second Sonata and a bunch of Chopin Nocturnes and the Mozart Sonata. And then we did this, and then I decided to move here, and then we did,
right.
And then we started working on it.
Well, was there, I mean, the way you said it just now, is just kind of like, was this something that just like all of a sudden came to you, or was it,
no.
Were there, what was the reasoning behind, I'm 100% on board with the idea that I don't want to hear someone play Chopin and Beethoven again, most, like 99% of the time,
mm-hmm.
just, I accept that they are masterworks. I don't have to accept that I need to hear them again. That is...
A lot of people, a lot of people think like that, and it's a pity because these works are beautiful, but yes, I mean, you can't...
Well, I mean,
you can't do something over and over and over again.
I can... Why do... The real... Here's the thing that I come into is that why do I need to go pay $30 to see you play these pieces again when I have some pretty fucking great recordings of Horowitz playing them, from 30 years ago,
yeah.
That are, I'm pretty much guaranteed to think that they are better than what you are doing.
Okay.
I mean the university.
I understand. I completely understand.
You know what I'm I mean?
Oh, no, yeah, of course. No, I completely understand you, and that's, a lot of people think that way, and it's okay to think that mm-hmm. way. That is one of the reasons, actually, why I started thinking that way, because we want to engage a young audience, too, to go to concerts, and so we have to offer something that is also adequate to our times and the possibilities we have, and you know, all the other stuff that is going on in our world. That we have to compete with also. I mean, no matter how good these works are, you just have to compete. It's still a business that you have to make successful.
And it's not necessarily like a lot of times you hear it kind of described as being like the downfall of classical music society. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, like, oh, well, like you're ruining music by doing, you know, by catering to this more digital age. And it's kind of like, well...
I definitely don't agree with that. I don't think you're ruining anything.
Of course. And it's just like, well, it's not... You're not... We've grown up in a different world than you grew up in. Like, it's...
Definitely,
it's
but...
It's just how it is.
Also, it's an interesting take on it. It doesn't... You know, not everybody has to like it, of course. There are people who, you know, don't like this kind of combination.
And who's to say that these composers wouldn't have done something like
exactly,
that?
Exactly, exactly. So that was really interesting to me to kind of get this kind of music to people who are also less used to hearing it, and it gives them a visual aid also. And I've realized that with my project Envisage, that was that project. A lot of people came up to me afterwards and said it was a totally an entirely new experience for them, and it was like they were sitting in a different world, and they were just, you know, taking all this music and these visuals, everything in, and they just forgot about the world outside. And that was the idea of it. And it's not, you know, another important thing was that it wouldn't distract from the music, that the visuals would complement the music. So I didn't want to have a storyline or everything, a real storyline, because that would, you know, then it would have been like a movie. That is not, for me, it's not the intention of those pieces of music.
A little more abstract.
Exactly.
But also, you know, abstract in the sense that it's more like vignettes than...
Yeah, I just basically wanted to create a location around the pieces. It's somewhere that people could just, you know, feel that they're somewhere else. Than the class concert hall, and
were there people who's like you were kind of, I don't want to say patterning yourself after, but like were there other artists who were doing things that you kind of gleaned bits from, or was it just kind of like
not really
combining multiple interests that you had?
Yeah, it was in the first place, it was multiple interests I had, because I've always been a big fan of visual art, of art videos, and I was definitely inspired by a few visual artists. Like Bill Viola was a big inspiration for me, and I also, before I started with the project, I went to see in London. I was living in London at the time. And I went to see at Royal Albert Hall. I went to see the concert performance of Tristan and Isolde, and Bill Viola did the visuals for that. And there was the final scene, Liebestod, was so, I still remember it to this day. It was one of the most impressive things for me ever. And that was definitely something that I wanted to, that I took as an inspiration for what I wanted to do, because it was such an immersion in the music, and it fit perfectly. And I just wanted to expand it a little bit, because what we did was not only there, what they did was a screen behind the stage.
Right.
And so what we did was we had three screens behind the stage that tilted slightly to the side and kind of embedded the piano. I don't know.
Right.
If that's the
right expression, so you're getting reflection from the screens on the instruments. Instrumentalist, or,
well,
or was it not quite
a bit? No, not really reflections, but we did have lights and projections. At first, we had a bunch of projections on the floor and the piano. We had to leave that out because it was too expensive. But also, we had projections on the wall and on the ceiling.
Gotcha.
And then we had lights from stage that went into the audience.
Interesting.
So it was a little more immersive than that, than what I saw in London. And also, a good friend of mine back in Switzerland, a great great visual artist, photographer and visual artist, Annelies Stürber. Mm-hmm. I've known her for years, and she actually did most of my CD album covers, the pictures on them. She has wonderful videos, and she also, I took a lot of inspiration from her work.
Yeah. So, well, it's funny, like, educational institutions, like, often jump on board with things like several years after that, like they start to become a thing. So like you doing what you're doing now, like would have been perfect for what, like the direction that Manus wants to take its students.
Oh, yeah.
It's so funny.
Yeah.
It's I just find that humorous. But like the point is that you were doing it before they were. Before they were teaching it, so like that's kind of the thing. You have to have people doing it before schools start teaching it.
Yeah, true.
Well, they're.
But I mean, I think they're changed. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, definitely.
So that's better. I think we were just at a time where they didn't realize how important this.
Oh, how important
is.
Like moving with the times is? Yeah. No. Yeah. No kidding. I should be more grateful. I recorded a lot of the first 20 episodes at Manus. Anyway, so I mean, this project was, but this project, these projects you're talking about are like started quite a few years ago now, right?
Yeah, that was when was that? 2012 was the beginning of it, and then I did concert tour in Switzerland in 2013.
So, so you kind of like take these things and you know. One thing that I bring up a lot with when I talk to people, and it's something a favorite TV critic of mine said, and he also used to write for Spin Magazine when Spin Magazine was a thing, as a music critic. But you have your entire life, and whatever like failures and experiences and encapsulate that, you have your entire life to do your first whatever it is, television show, your first album, your first major project, your first major tour. So for you, you know, like then 2012, 2013, like you've spent, you know, I don't know, how old were you then?
How old was I? 25?
Right.
25.
Okay. Yeah. So you're 25, you know, and you this is the thing that you've like been putting all of this blood, sweat and tears, so to speak, into, I don't know how much you bleed when you play, you know, when you over practice.
Well,
but
sometimes I do.
Yeah.
My fingers bleed sometimes.
Yeah, exactly.
If
you're not bleeding, you're not doing it right.
Yes.
That's stupid. But no, like you put all this time in, and here's the thing. So what do you do after that?
Good question.
That's
very good question. Yeah, because things never work out the way you think they will.
Well,
never. And I've learned that the hard way many times.
Well, I mean, I assumed that after 6 months, I'd be like super rich and famous for doing a podcast on iTunes like 5 years after it was like a cutting edge thing to do.
Why not? Yeah.
Yeah.
No. That's the eternal struggle, I guess, because...
God, don't say eternal, man. That just sounds depressing. No, I'm just kidding.
We'll never get out of this world.
We'll never.
We're musicians.
It's always...
We're bound to have really, you know, difficult lives. Hard times, no, but no, but it's difficult, and as a musician or an artist in general, you just have to reinvent yourself all the time, especially now where our music industry has changed drastically in the last 5 years. It's just nothing's the way it used to be.
Yeah, I mean, and if you're talking about the record industry in particular, like. Classical music hasn't been like a huge seller for a long time. Like, you know, it was huge sellers. You know, you got huge sales on classical records, certain classical records, like especially with Bernstein and Arthur Fiedler, like up until like the 60s and 70s. But like classical music hasn't been a big seller for a long time. And now even more so with the just lack of there being physical records.
True.
And how much money do you get from an iTunes download? Like,
barely anything,
like
most people are streaming, they're not even buying,
and that's even
streaming.
Less than what you get from a download.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, it's tough, but there are good parts of this industry having changed so much and bad parts. So the bad part is that we're not selling.
But on the other hand, it's easier to make good quality stuff, and it's easier to get it to people.
Yeah, exactly. To put yourself out there, it's much easier. There are many more channels to do so.
Like I can put this in the ears of someone who's living in Mongolia.
Yep.
Well, absolutely. I mean, I don't think that's happened, but could happen. You know, like that's could happen.
I've
you have friends in Mongolia?
I don't have friends there, but not in Mongolia. No, but I see that my recordings are being bought by people in Egypt or by people in Saudi Arabia or in India or Japan, for that matter. That
makes a little more sense.
Yeah, that makes a little more sense. Yeah, that's true. But I mean, it's not that anything doesn't make sense. It does make sense anyway. People like the music. That's great. But yeah, no, I know what you're saying. You can get your stuff out to people who you don't have any access to, really, mm-hmm. yourself. You would have never thought that they would
and
have access
to
your music.
If you can, and this has happened. I watch a lot of TV because mm-hmm. why not?
Why not?
There's a lot of really good TV and lots of streaming services. But television and mostly is, but music to some extent and the podcast. Well, anyway, but the point is like there's like a nicheification of these things. Like if mm-hmm. you can take over a specific niche, people like the people who have the money who want to give it to artists. Mm-hmm. They don't necessarily, it's gotten to a point where it's not as important how much you're selling. Like, mm-hmm. for instance, there's a show that just premiered its third season called Halt and Catch Fire mm-hmm. on AMC.
Okay.
As far as, like, traditional viewing metrics, mm-hmm. it's, like, less than 500,000 people a mm-hmm. week, which is, like, really, really bad for TV.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But critics love it, and they get a conversation going. Mm-hmm. So they want to keep it.
Oh,
they'll spend
the
money mm-hmm. to keep it on the air. And in some ways, there's like within the music community, those dudes like those, God, those dude, the piano guys.
Yes.
I'm sure people have opinions about whether what they do is good or not. It's mm-hmm. it's
of course
you it's, can't deny yeah. that it's really fun, mm-hmm. that's for sure. Mm-hmm. And they know like they can put together good arrangements. Mm-hmm. But they took over a niche. I'm sure
they're
not selling like as compared to someone like Kanye, they're probably not selling nearly like they're selling a tiny fraction of the records that he sells.
But they're
but
they're
within their
really
niche they have a very good following.
They have huge concerts. Mm-hmm. They sell out huge halls.
So it's all about perspective and they're having the right people talking about it.
Reinventing yourself. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And talking about you is a big, big part of it. Yeah, definitely.
Anyway, so, but the all of this, we got like super distracted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's my part, mostly my fault. But, but like, where, after you do something mm-hmm. like you did, like, where do you go next after that?
Well, what I did back then is I felt like breaking out of this box called classical music. I just didn't feel comfortable. I was very disappointed by the scene as well, and
it wasn't enough to like shift how you performed classical music.
No, it wasn't. And lucky for me, I got an email one day from my good friend. Now good friend Jason Hayes, who is one of the lead composers of World of Warcraft for Blizzard, and he that was right after Envisage finished. Actually, he had seen a video of Envisage on YouTube, and his intention was to found a band of half classical instruments and half rock instruments that played video game covers for a rock formation, and he thought, because I was already working with multimedia, I was a little open, but I had a solid foundation in classical piano. He thought I was a good fit and asked me if I wanted to join, and that came out of the blue for me because I had never thought about playing another type of music, actually. Mm-hmm. I really didn't. And because I was so focused on that box of playing classical music, And then I thought about it for a while because I was also scared, you know, to change my path like that. But then I thought, well, I don't really know what to do with classical music anymore. I mean, I was kind of in a rut, and Envisage didn't work out the way I wanted it to. It didn't really get picked up. And so I took a chance and I said, yes, I'll try it, because what could I lose? I thought, you know, it's exciting, and I'm naturally a very, very curious person, and I want to try things out. So I thought, okay, well, that sounds exciting, because they were going to fly me into LA too, and, you know, shoot some music videos and something I had never done before, and record the first album for that band. And I just said yes, and we started doing it, and it was a lot of fun. It was really a lot of fun, and I like that kind of music. Also, video game music has come a long way. It's amazing the productions they have now, and the good, really good composers.
And it was the Japanese-based games companies were way ahead of the American ones, and as far as that goes, for sure. Well, I mean, because it's important. It's important to have if you want to create an immersive world, whether that's in a concert setting or in a video game setting, like, music is really important.
Yep.
You know, definitely, like, it's important to have that, you know, and
it makes, like, a movie would not be half as interesting.
Well, especially, like, I mean, it depends on the genre, I guess. No one's really gonna give a shit about the music on Call of Duty, but
it creates an atmosphere, but
you've come to expect, like, specific string swells and specific, like, oh, this is emotional. The person died. Oh no. The world's about to explode.
It's important.
But I would say that, like, games that are very, very character driven, specifically, and play with your perceptions of story and storytelling. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, those are the ones that generally have put a lot of effort and work into every single element, not just of gameplay, but also of music. And that can be looked over by "quote unquote" serious classical musicians.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I mean that's probably not entirely fair, because I think a lot of it comes from just not having the knowledge of it.
Yeah, that, you know, definitely.
Like,
yeah,
like being, you know, taking shots at musicians for not understanding something they don't really have any knowledge of is just not fair. But
true,
you also have to, like, keep yourself open to those things, and sometimes that is not the case.
Yep. Unfortunately, that's so true.
But you had, like, no concept of this stuff.
No, I did have a concept, because I have played video games in my life. And I did know what they were talking about, of course.
Gotcha.
And I did know some of music, for example. I mean, Halo, I had played Halo before. And I mean, I played a bunch of video games, actually. I played a lot of Nintendo 64 when I was younger. And some PC games. And also my brothers played a lot of games, and so I did absolutely have a concept of what it was, but I didn't know that people were actually covering this music play it in concerts.
People pay for this shit.
Yeah.
No, but actually, I
didn't know that there was actually, you know, I didn't know that there was an audience specifically for music that comes from games.
Exactly. That was what I'm saying.
Like, yeah, exactly. And that they're so passionate about it.
I will. Just an example, like, I moved to New York in 2010, I think, something like the fall of 2010, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the fall, my teacher, Dave Taylor, calls me up one time, or says in a lesson or something, maybe texts me, I don't remember, it's been 6 years, of course I don't remember. Yeah. There's been a lot of whiskey drank since then, so why would I remember? But no, he texted me and was like, I'm playing a concert, it's something. He was still doing a lot of pickup orchestras. Like, he was like, oh yeah, I'm doing some sort of, he's 70, so he's like, doing, like, this video game concert down at BAM. the Brooklyn Academy of Music, and he's like, I have two comps, someone's gonna come to see, you know, I'm not gonna use them for anything, do you want, you know, you wanna come, see if you can bring somebody with me. Of course, I didn't bring anyone with me, but I went, and it turned out to be a two-plus hour concert of music from every single Final Fantasy game, up until whatever was the most, like, the current one at that time, I think. In 2010 would have been 13.
13, yeah. That came out in 2010.
Exactly. So, like, it was the newest one. 13, I think, had just come out, and they were, like, they finished it.
Yeah.
That. And I was just like, okay, whatever, you know, and I went. And I looked it up online. I was like, oh, whatever, it's free. I go, and I'm just like, it's fucking sold out. And it's, you know, 80% of people are in cosplay. And I'm like, what is happening? And for some reason, he was like, oh, yeah, it's like young people. And you'll probably fit right in. I'm like, I don't fit in. I've never cosplayed anything except for, like, sort of Doctor Who. And I'm just like, what is happening? What is with these freaks? No, that's not true. Well, at the time, yes, I did think that.
It's fun, though. It's really fun.
Sure, but if you're not expecting it, it's pretty jarring.
It's a little freaky. I can be freaky, I'm sure.
And it was great. And of course, but I did leave in the middle of the last encore so I could get out before, so I didn't have to, like, get run over by people, like, wearing a lot of tights. And anyway, all of that just to illustrate the point that, like, yeah, it's a really profitable business.
Yeah.
If you're willing to, like, do it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And yeah, I mean, Final Fantasy has amazing music anyways. I mean, it's that is known for the music, actually. Yeah. And Zelda has great music too.
Final Fantasy, I still don't get why it's such a popular game, though. I don't think it's fun at all.
Really?
Yeah. Oh. That's just my... I haven't
played it too much.
I don't know. I just never... I never got into it. Anyway, point is, you're playing, like, you started playing video game music and stuff.
Yes, exactly. Okay, yeah. I started playing with the band, and it was a lot of fun. We toured a bunch of conventions, and I started playing with Taylor Davis, who I then went on tour with, later. She is a YouTube violinist. She started her career on YouTube because she is a real gamer. She loves games. Through middle school she always gamed, and she loved the music from that, and she decided from the beginning on that she was gonna play that kind of music and not classical music. So she found a niche. She's someone who actually found a niche
and has had
a lot of success with it. So
she was in the band. Yeah. Unintentionally, even through, like, Pandora.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know,
yeah, exactly.
You might know this person. Right. Yeah. Like, it's the same that what we're talking about, that niche.
Exactly. And she's a very smart businesswoman as well. So she did everything right to make a living with a niche, with something out of a niche. But I met her actually through Critical Hit, because she was an original member of the band, and she later left because she had other projects, but
making too much money.
I'm not sure that's ever you know, that's a problem in a musician's life, but but anyway, so through her, she was very, very encouraging. We are really good friends now. Mm-hmm. I mean, she's one of my best friends, actually. And she has always been very encouraging to me to, you know, try out this genre of music, because I had so much fun with it, and I was so curious too. So I recorded my first solo album with video game and anime music last year. And released my album Play last November, and
it's funny because if you go on iTunes, you know, you have two albums.
Yeah,
and one of them's the music from
Envisage.
It's America. Well, I'm born in America. It's going to be Envisage.
Envisage.
It sounds much more refined when you say it. Like, it sounds like an art installation when you say it. When I say it, I'm like, I sound like I'm reading from a Steinbeck novel. But no, it's funny because you see that, you're like, and if you look at the track list for both of them, you're like, well, one of them's like all of this Chopin.
Yes.
And I'm just like, oh, that's nice. And you click on your most recent album from last year, and you're like, This is none of that.
It's yeah, all yeah, it's true. It's quite a jump from this video game. It's quite a jump. Yeah, I actually have more. I have more classical albums actually. Mm-hmm. But they're all on Bandcamp, not mm-hmm. on my iTunes page. But yeah, so it was a big jump, but I love it, and I've started playing solo recitals now with this kind of repertoire. I'm working on more. I started arranging myself because I used to never do that. I was always scared of it.
It's nerve-wracking.
Yeah.
It's not as nerve-wracking if you're writing the arrangements for yourself, but
true, yeah.
If you're writing them for other people, it's...
I've never done that. I've only collaborated with mm-hmm. people, and we've done duos together, but... Yeah. But I'm having so much fun with it, and it's, you know, it gives me more freedom to play what I actually want to play, as opposed to play what the composer wants me to play.
Yeah.
I mean, it's still, of course, if you're covering something, that it's still something that you didn't compose yourself. So
yeah.
In a way, but I can arrange it a way where it fits my hands, for example.
Of course.
And it's more of, you know, the technical styles that I like to play, or I think I can play, and so I'm having a lot of fun with it, and I'm actually working on a new album now with all soundtrack covers from Studio Ghibli movies, Hayao Miyazaki, like My Neighbor Totoro and Princess Mononoke and Spirited Away.
Yeah.
That I grew up with those movies, and the soundtracks are just so beautiful.
Only the most revered animated Japanese animated director of all time.
Yes.
Yeah,
wonderful, wonderful movies, and I love the music from them so much. And so yeah, I decided to make an album. To record an album with those with arrangements for piano from those movies, and so I'm working on it now. I'm writing arrangements now, plus I'm commissioned my friend Alex Weston, who's a great composer, who has also written arrangements for my last album, to do half of them, because I'm very slow with them. I don't trust myself to write an entire album with my arrangements, so
and he's good at that.
He's very good at that. Yeah, exactly. So, well, yeah, it's exciting.
I imagine it's also quicker when you don't have to write the music yourself, too.
Mm, yeah.
In Alex's case.
Yes, definitely. I think so.
I don't want to get too technical, but from, a technical perspective, is there, a gap between doing... I don't want to say what you used to do. I'm mm-hmm. sure you still do.
Yeah.
You still do. I mean, I don't know what that is on your stand on the piano right now.
That is a 12-tone video game theme arrangement by my friend Austin Wintory that I'm learning right now.
I'm not going to use that.
So it's video game music technically.
No,
I still do classical music.
Yeah,
I'm about to release.
You're not going to give up Bach forever, right?
No, of course not. And I've also on my so I started. Doing more music videos on YouTube in January. I've been trying to release two videos every month, which hasn't quite worked out in the last couple of months. But I've done at least two with classical pieces, one Mendelssohn song without words and one Greek Norwegian folk songs. And I am about to release a Liszt Mephisto Waltz video. So no, I still definitely do.
Right, so... when you're approaching these things as a musician, where are the differences?
Harmonies, definitely, and the rhythms. I mean, it's a lot of video game music and anime music is much more jazzy than I was used to.
Right. That makes sense. Mm-hmm. But I mean,
technically,
I'm just talking about within your own approach.
Oh.
Like how you.
Oh yeah.
Like when you're sitting down to play Mephisto as mm-hmm. opposed to. This fucking 12-tone thing.
Well, this one is an exception.
This
so
one,
let's not talk about this
one. This one's a special
let's
one. You're,
not
you're,
talk
you're
about
still
this
fighting
one yet,
with it.
Yes.
Let's not talk about that.
The approach. That's a good question.
Let me give you an example. Mm-hmm. I was listening to a few tracks off your album Play, mm-hmm. and one of my favorite game series of the past 5 or 6 years is BioShock. Love BioShock.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Love all
mm-hmm.
three of them. I've played all three of them mm-hmm. many times. And you have a piece from the first BioShock game.
Mm-hmm.
And I listened to it, and it's different, but it's like looking at a classical piece, through the filter. It's hard to... people listening to this might probably haven't played BioShock because they're practicing like good musicians. But, like, it's like looking it through, like, a weird watery filter, which makes sense if you've played Bioshock. But but it's, like, I don't know. It's the same. It's similar, but it's, like, weird.
Yeah, I think, well, it's very strange, but I feel like I have much more liberty with the video game music stuff. Like, there's something inside of me that is not constantly worried about
disappointing and hundreds of years of pianists.
Yes, exactly. that is very accurate. And because, you know, you learn to follow exactly what is in the score, and if you don't exactly do that, it's not right. It's literally you're told that it's not right. And I don't feel that tension when I play the video game music, because for me it's much more, and that might be a personal thing, but for me it's much more free, because I follow more the passion. That sounds cheesy, but I follow more what I actually, okay, let's talk super cheesy here. I follow more what's in my heart than
what is this, a fucking second act song in a Broadway musical? Jesus, it's in your heart. No, like, that's, I mean, sure, it's cheesy, but it's like a vital part of what makes a musician a musician. Mm-hmm. Come on.
Yeah, no, like, absolutely. And
it's just funny. I feel like as musicians often, because I obviously I've run into the same thing, like studying with classical trombone players. I'm not really a big fan of, like, traditional classical music, necessarily. I'm never going to sit at home and listen to a Wagner opera, ever.
Like, well, there's, you're missing out.
Whatever. I'm missing out on, like, sleep. That's what I'm missing out on.
Oh, my God.
Anyway, no. Which is funny, because that's what trombone players usually like, is Wagner. But I'm just not a huge fan. But the point... Fuck, I forgot what I was going with. No, but, like, you go and you play these things, and because of the way things are set up, like, you, yeah, like you're saying, it's like, play exactly what's on the page. Mm-hmm. And then they try and tell you to play with, like, emotion and feeling, and it's just like, well, what do you want? Which one do you want? Do you want exactly, like, note perfect what's on the page? Because, like, a lot of times, artistry is messy. You know?
Yeah.
And yet there's people who can do both. There's a lot of people. There's great orchestral musicians. It hurts me to say that, but there's great orchestral musicians who can do both and do extremely good job. But then there's also orchestral musicians who don't, who absolutely do not play with any kind of passion or feeling or with their heart.
Yeah.
You know?
It's true. I mean, I'm not saying that it's not possible, and I'm not saying that I've never played classical music with passion, because I have definitely done that, but I've also always felt just some enormous amount of pressure. You know,
it's limiting. It can be limiting.
Can be a little limiting,
depending on who you are.
And, you know, yeah, it's true. I mean, Beethoven was very specific with his dynamics in the piece, and it's widely known, of course, and every teacher will tell you to follow exactly that. So, you know, it's a lot of pressure, and there are also so many people who have played it before, right, you know? And so...
I would say with air quotes. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like this pressure is falling off with the video game and anime music.
Yeah. Yeah, I just always, like, when it comes, I can see, like, how the pressure would be different. It's just so funny to me that you look at things and you think that some of these, the greatest recordings of great piano music, I think, are ones that don't follow what you get taught to do now. That's my personal opinion. But yeah, I don't know the library enough.
Oftentimes, like, I feel the same way, just because it's,
But that's...
Yeah. It's more... It's just a little more exciting. Because otherwise it's like something is restrained in a musician.
I would imagine that, like, any person who went in and replicated Goldberg Variations like Glenn Gould did it in 1981 would probably be like, what the fuck are you doing, dude? You know, but anyway. So, less pressure, more freeing.
Yeah.
Well, how do you like? I mean, were the pieces that you play regularly or chose for at least, you know, the initial run, mm-hmm. Were they ones from games that you played and liked, or were they sometimes like you would hear it in a trailer or hear it? Like, how do you pick that stuff?
Some of our games that I've known for a while, I mean, that I knew before and I have played. Some are pieces that I've heard through either Critical Hit or Taylor or other friends, composer friends in that genre. And some are pieces that I found through research and that I really, really liked, like Mass Effect. Mm-hmm. I have a piece from Mass Effect 3 on play, and that soundtrack is just really beautiful. Mm-hmm. I love it. And so that's how I chose that one. And so, yeah, it depends. It's dependent. I just chose the ones that spoke to me the most. Yeah. But, like, I have a piece from GoldenEye 64 on there.
Of course. Why just wouldn't because you? I played it's that only the so greatest N64 game that was ever made.
I actually, so I commissioned a piece from Mario Kart 64 as well. Aww. A medley. And I'm going to record it at some point, but I didn't make it. It didn't make it on the album. Yeah, so
you gotta clear out shit for Mario Kart 64 because that needs a lot of room.
Yes.
You can't just like bury it at track 8 on your first album. Nope, you've got to like lead off with that shit.
It's a really fun arrangement. Actually, yeah. I want to record it, but it's a heart piece, so I need to have some time.
Gotta work on it. Whatever.
Work on it.
What are you talking about? I just assumed that like video game music is like sight readable and you just be like, done.
Of course, naturally.
Yeah. Well, the problem is like a lot of times when there's like orchestra arrangements, when you get your if you're playing trombone and you get the part for your video game music, it is kind of like that. Mm-hmm. It's like garbage parts that are just like, hold on.
Well, for you guys, yeah.
16 then. I'm like, fuck you. I can definitely play the hardest shit.
Yeah.
I'm like Donald Trump. I play all the hard. I have all the best notes.
Yes.
I've got the best notes. I play the hardest notes. People love my notes.
You don't even know how hard I can play.
You don't even know how good my notes are. People have said that my notes are the best. Oh, man.
Yes, that, yes.
I should avoid politics. I don't know. Anyway, so you said you were currently working on a new album.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a name for it yet?
No, yeah, no. That's always the hardest part for me.
Yeah.
It's so difficult.
Well, there's a title that I was thinking of recently. I don't think it's ever been used in a video game or anything before. Mm-hmm. It's like Kingdom Hearts. I think that's like a really cool name.
I was like, wait.
You thought I was serious.
I was looking at him.
Is
he serious right now?
Like, I feel like that's just a really cool name for anything. I'm just going to give that one to you.
Yes.
Anyway. It's like, well, you don't want to like offend me by saying it's already been used.
I wonder how I should tell him.
So do you have like a kind of like a, I mean, obviously you don't have a release date, but like a target that you're kind
of
shooting for?
Yeah, end of the year. I want to record in October. Mm-hmm. And
God, well, I've seen it's August, but I keep feeling like it's fucking May.
Yeah, me too. I don't realize that I'm running out of time, actually.
Yeah, seriously. Like, I'm
because I still
like,
have to, I haven't written all the arrangements and I still have to practice them, so. We'll see about that. No. I want to record in October and then mm-hmm. release
before
usually,
the end,
yeah.
Again, you just release it independently. And,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, like the last time.
This will probably be the record that gets you a record deal.
Yeah.
I was going to say record deal, but you want to... Sorry, I was thinking too small, obviously. Jeez. Grammy it is. You know, you kick out like those schmucks like Room Full of Teeth. They don't, you know, clear out new music. This is video game music.
Here I come.
Yeah. Cool. Are you doing shows here in the city until that, around, you know, before
I'm hoping so. Yeah, I have I'm working on some scheduling. Mm-hmm. And I hope to have it fixed soon. I did one 2 weeks ago at Cornelia Street Cafe.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. I saw that on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Was that really 2 weeks ago? Because I was like, I should go to that. And then I was out of town on that day.
Oh, no, exactly. No, it wasn't exactly 2 weeks ago because now is Wednesday and not Monday. But it was last Monday 2 weeks ago.
Gotcha. Yeah. So I just it's like one of those things where I'm asking you this. I'm like, wait, isn't there one like soon? No, it happened already.
Yeah, it happened. Yeah. The time passes so quickly. Yep. I still, like you said, I still feel like it's not even summer yet.
Yeah. Weather notwithstanding.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Great. So you have your stuff on iTunes,
mm-hmm.
and on SoundCloud, I would imagine.
Not SoundCloud. No, I have Bandcamp. I don't have a SoundCloud account. Maybe I should have one. I don't know. But I have a Bandcamp. You can listen to everything on Bandcamp.
Spotify?
Spotify, I have my stuff, yeah. I have Anusage and Play on Spotify, mm-hmm. and then I have YouTube,
and your website is
salomepiano.com.
Great.
As is most of my social medias,
the Instagrams, the Twitters,
exactly.
The Snapchats.
Yeah, no. Yeah. I have Snapchat, but I don't use it.
I don't know how to use it.
Face swap. Something with friends.
I haven't even figured out. Like, I have literally no idea how to use Snapchat.
Only know how to use it for this face swap filter.
Yeah, I've barely figured out how to use like Instagram Stories, which is like their version of the Snapchat thing.
Oh, I haven't used that yet.
Yeah, I mean,
I only use the photo on Instagram and the video.
Yeah. So, well, anyway, Salome Piano. Now this is gonna be super embarrassing for me. But I want to make sure I don't mispronounce your last name. Mm. So
Scheidegger.
Okay, then I wouldn't have. Great.
No, it's one's much easier to pronounce than my first name. Actually, my first name gets mispronounced all the time.
Salome.
Salome. Salome. Salami.
Where have you been going? Like, where are these people? Like, where are you playing for people?
Well,
I guess if you grow up. Yeah. Well, see, like I. You grow like if you're like me and you grow up in like a Bible-y household. Mm-hmm. There's Salome in the Bible, which of course becomes the Richard Strauss opera Salome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's like I guess, although like a lot of Salome.
Yep.
Anyway, but now that we've
hurts me every
made
time.
Fun of your name for the last 30 seconds.
I'm used to it.
you just said it hurts me every time, and now you're like, it's fine. I'm used to it.
It's not. I didn't say it's fine. I just said I'm used to it. It still hurts.
the pain, it dulls. It dulls.
It's no surprise.
Like if you stab yourself in the same place over and over again, it eventually stops. It eventually doesn't hurt as much. And God, that's dark. Anyway, that's yes. a great
yeah,
place
that
to
one
end.
Really, yeah.
It's a good place to end.
Gone way off track.
Yeah, that's the idea. Mm-hmm. Anyway, thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Dan.